Welcome back to Biff, a podcast about superhero TV shows, movies, and fast food joints. My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined by my fellow aliens throughout time. John Maltz is here. Hi, John.
I did have a burger last night, but it was an impossible burger.
I mean, you could argue there are some impossible burgers in this show, too. Guy English is also here. Hi, Guy.
History remembers the deadliest butterfly attack on record.
Does it, though?
I love how sincerely that line is delivered, because it's not even for one of our main characters. It's just, like, a reporter lady. And, like, just the earnestness of, like, the concept of the deadliest butterfly attack on record is just perfect. It's awesome.
We are here to discuss season 6, episode 2 of DC's Legends of Tomorrow, entitled Meet, M-E-A-T, colon, The Legends. And John Maltz is on recap duty this week.
You are correct, sir. So an alien has crashed in San Bernardino, the home of fast food, in 1955, and apparently will kill everyone in the town, starting at a place called Big Bang Burger. So they're going to go back, stop the alien, and get it to tell them where Sarah is. Spooner is not kind of down with the team yet and isn't great at blending in when they get there. Sarah and Gary, meanwhile, crash on an alien planet, and they're out of fuel. Gary reveals he and his fiancée were hired by a space lord to gather the universe's most dangerous creatures. They look out the window, and there's a dog, oddly, so Sarah decides to follow it, because you always follow the dog. Yeah. Mm-hmm. At the burger joint, they're investigating. In the 50s, there is a running alien motif. There's a mascot dressed as an alien. Barad turns them off the meat, fortunately. Two cops ignore calls that are coming into them and because they want to keep eating more burgers. And then Spooner gets a reading. It's hungry. Rory notices all the calls involved meat, and Barad, Nate, and Zari get jobs at the burger place. So that's our Team B. Team A goes to a butcher shop where they find the guy who was in the alien mascot suit, and he's standing there eating raw meat, I guess. They take him back to the ship.
Can I admit something to you quickly?
Yeah.
Just because I love interrupting you. I watched this twice because I woke up at like 6 a.m. for some reason, and I watched it then. And then I was half falling asleep, so I watched it again just before I did the show. So I'd seen it, and I was idly on my phone looking up the prices that they posted in the butcher store, and I found a website that will it'll calculate the inflation of ground beef between 1945 and 1955. Anyway. I think they just made it up, is what I'm trying to say.
So. Yeah, I would imagine.
The butcher shop also contained
close-ish, but like,
yeah. I did notice there was a sign in the back for new maple bacon, which seemed too early for that, but I don't know.
There's maybe a bunch of stuff. They've got a mushroom burger. They've got a fish burger in a 1955 burger joint. Well, I mean,
I don't know. I mean, McDonald's, I don't know when the fish witch was invented, but
1955 seems a little early. By the way, you can tell that we don't have a lot of superheroes we have to cover, so I'm vamping up the time.
We're discussing burgers.
Yeah. Anyway. Okay. Sorry to stop you.
No. Important information. the dog leads Sarah and Gary to a hut where they find Amelia Earhart, which can't be right because she's in the Delta Quadrant. Barad and Zari fight over the totem. The mascot checks out as human, then John does his thing, and the mascot vomits Big Bang Burger sauce all over the ceiling, which Spooner sort of recognizes as part of the alien, I guess. Ava tells the B-team to stop serving and bottle up the sauce, but the owner, Bert Beeman, tries to stop them and reveals that his wife is making the sauce. Amelia Earhart seems a little too interested in feeding Sarah and Gary before they try to go fix the ship. The A-team rolls up to Beeman's house, and Ava tries to get Mrs. Beeman to reveal the secret of the sauce, and then something drops from a vent in the ceiling. The sauce drops from the vent in the ceiling. Meanwhile, meat zombies are attacking the burger joint. Spooner and John find the alien containment pod in the garage, and Ava finds the alien gestation pod in the attic. She gets knocked over the head by Mrs. Beeman. She tells the disgusting backstory of how the sauce fell in Bert's food, and she found the alien and put the sauce on the burgers. Spooner knocks her out. The B-team puts Zari's sleepy time dragon ash in the burgers to knock out the zombies. The sauce is the alien's means of fattening up the town so it can feed when it comes out of the pod, which it does, and then it eats Mrs. Beeman.
I really, really like that life cycle. Like, it actually made sense. You know what I mean?
It does make sense. Yeah, right.
And you can totally see, like, weird crap happens in the insect kingdom, you know? Like, there's, like, fungus that will, like, mess up ants and, like, and have them to go do all weird stuff. This, I could totally see, makes sense. You create something delicious, people gorge themselves on it, and then you eat them.
Right.
It's true. Awesome. Like, that actually...
Perfect.
It's a good plan. It's
nature is beautiful.
Well, I did not expect them to have, like, a sort of a... somewhat viable life cycle for this thing.
Yeah, plotted out for this insect, which looks like Mothra and sounds like Godzilla.
Yep.
Bayrod lets Sari use the totem to help serve the burgers. The bug alien flies to the burger joint and eats Beeman, which is, you know, sort of nice. He doesn't have to deal with the feelings of finding out his wife is dead. Spooner shoots it, and it hits the burger joint sign and is electrocuted. Ava and Spooner share a drink and make nice. Spooner tells her her mom was abducted by aliens, and Ava invites her to stay with the team. The waitress, meanwhile, reopens the burger place as Big Belly Burger.
Origin story.
We have continuity, yeah.
I did not see that coming.
Like, I saw it the minute they were starting to interview her.
I didn't see it coming. I don't know. I was probably still, like, obsessed with the price of ground meat in 55 or whatever it was, like the life cycle of this thing. And that's adorable, though. I like it a lot. Yeah, also, I like that it's, it's founded by a black woman, which, just coming from Falcon and the Winter Soldier, guess what? This time travel show does not touch realistic scenarios at all. But yeah, she was a lot of fun. I liked it. I loved when she just dove into the garbage can. It's awesome.
As you do.
Yeah. I mean, that's how you...
Bayrod talks to Zari about sharing the totem, which she tries to push off, but then the original Zari inside the totem snaps her fingers and makes splits the totem into two so that they can both have one. Amelia Earhart seems to be having a bit of a problem and doesn't want them to leave, and it turns out she's, I guess, some kind of an alien. She attacks Sarah and sort of bites her or stings her. Sarah and Gary flee, and they are surrounded by lights that are coming from out of the woods.
Ran it back so I could check, but I sort of glimpsed Spooner's gun. I don't know if you guys saw when Sarah hands it back to her in particular.
Steampunky.
It looks even more than that. I think it's built on the same thing that Han Solo's blaster is built on. It has a very similar shape.
Oh, there you go.
And like,
the
sort of whatever the base of it is, I think they use the same weapon.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, it just, this one looks like it's got a silencer on it instead of that cone thing that comes out.
Yep,
right, yeah, right.
So I liked it, but I saw that and did it sort of a double take, and then I had to run it back and be like, wait a second.
Yeah, that's fun.
But yeah, I assume that they like throwing in their little homages like that. Lines that jumped out at me this week, which I enjoyed a lot. when they're talking about the massacre on Main Street, and Sarah says, I would have gone for suburban slaughter. And Nate's like, save it for the podcast.
Save it for
the podcast. As we remember, Sarah has a true crime podcast. Ava has a true crime podcast.
True crime podcast. I forgot about that.
The scene where Nate is given the roller skates, and they're like, we could use a handsome man out there. No. Okay.
No. Okay.
Yeah.
That was good. And then the John taking the magic book away from Spooner. Unless you want to summon a trickster prawn, I'd like to see a prawn get one over on me. those were all pretty good lines.
And Bayrod's, you know,
everything
burger
with Bayrod
flipping thing.
Yeah,
that
Doomsday
was
is finally here, and it ordered the burger.
that one was
good.
Wrote that one down too. Sarah describing it as a parasitic condiment.
It's the dinner rush.
Yeah.
Gary, you are not planning my wedding. And I enjoyed
his little curtsy.
Yes, when meeting Amelia Earhart and his playing cards. Then when they shoot the bug at the end, it hits the sign and it says crispy bugs instead of crispy fries and burgers. little on the nose.
I didn't notice that. Oh, yeah. I didn't notice that.
Pretty good. But yeah, totally random.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Amelia Earhart is a total Star Trek character.
A historical figure guy, I just want to point out.
I know, besides being in the Delta Quadrant. No, but like, how many Star Trek episodes are we presented with a human character that turns out to be an alien? There's like the salt vampire, there's like the guardian of Famke Janssen. There's like the one where Riker's stuck in a Romulan thing with a little boy who turns out to be a gray alien.
Right.
I was just thinking about that one.
Just off the top of my head. Like, it's a total trope. And I liked it. That was pretty spooky. And I kind of liked the way she was going along with it, too. Like, okay, yeah, I guess we'll stay for dinner. It's weird, but...
Yeah, okay. I don't know. And like, it was the moment when she said, like, I have to serve you or something. I'm like, okay, this is not right. But yeah, I don't know. I didn't know where... I didn't know where that was going. Why Amelia Earhart?
We still don't really know exactly. I mean, I don't understand why there was an alien there.
Or a dog. Or a giant bone.
I think the dog is the alien.
It could be. Or the dog could be the boss.
We didn't see them together, but one time the dog is outside the hut before they go in, I think. And then Amelia Earhart is inside the hut, so I don't know. But
she comes out.
That's true. Yeah, that's right. She comes
out with the gun.
We'll find out. We'll find out later, I'm sure.
There's lots of aliens.
Yeah.
Also, I don't understand that alien's motivation. Like, I understand the moth's motivation a lot more than I understand this one. Like, so.
Well, yeah, I don't think you're supposed to yet.
And you keep saying you want to go home, and you're excited that she has a ship, but you're trying to keep her there. And then you attack her and poison her. Somehow.
Well, that seems like a desperation move. But yeah,
I think we will find out more next week.
I think John's right that we don't know the whole story there yet.
Yeah. Please wait for your alien motivation.
Well, it's also interesting they've decided to split the party this season a bit. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of curious to know. I mean, you know, obviously they didn't just immediately rescue Sarah in episode one. But it's always tricky with these things because I wonder about how long you can keep things going.
Wasn't there an Arrow like cliffhanger that they completely resolved?
They blew up the island and everybody was dead. And then, no, it's fine. Don't worry about that.
Literally, everyone was fine except for like two people.
Yeah. Part of me thinks that like maybe Katie Lutz didn't want to do that much work. So they're like, okay, well, we'll go out in the woods for a week or two.
Well, and they also might have wanted to split up. I mean, I guess they were going to do that anyway, but because of COVID, it might have been better to not have everybody together.
That could make sense. Yeah. Although, it happened in the end of last season, but whatever. They can shoot that completely independently.
Oh, yeah. Like,
she's in the world's jankiest spaceship set.
Clearly did some of that with part of the plot on Supergirl this season, because there's a whole thing with Kara being like off in somewhere else. And I think that was less about COVID than I think she had a baby. And so they were like, clearly, like, let's split it off to have her so that we can shoot her on a different schedule / mm-hmm. she can be gone from the show for a while. But then it turned out because of COVID, I think she ended up coming off maternity leave like before they even got back to shooting. I'm not sure if they're just like, we're just kind of stuck with that now because we started down that road. Yeah. But I don't know. Yeah, there's lots of reasons.
Just to be clear, I'm not critiquing it. Like, I don't know. It's how many seasons is it? Seven? Like, you know, maybe you want to break it. I know Dominic Purcell was at one point being like, I'm kind of done with the show. And I don't blame him. Like,
I think narratively, too, there's a good rationale for having, you know, changing the dynamic of the team by putting Ava in charge and having to have them cope with it. And I like that they've had an impact not just on Ava, but also on Mick, because, you know, sort of the point being they're the last two of the OG legends. And so Mick, with Sarah gone, Mick is kind of a little bit more adrift, but also kind of driven to get her back in a rare show of sort of loyalty, friendship. I don't know what you want to call it, camaraderie, but
He's not screwing around in this one. I really love that he knows all the police codes. Like the police radio is going off and he's like studiously taking notes. And I'm like, oh yeah, this guy, he's probably actually really good at being criminal. You know, like we don't get to see that much. I love the episodes where they need an artifact and he just goes and gets it off screen. Yeah. He'll go rob a bank or something, or go rob a museum, and he just shows up with what they need. But yeah, he hasn't been in either of these very much.
Yeah, I don't think they've. So, I mean, and that's tricky. Anytime you have a show that has, and I was counting, it's like seven or eight main characters. Like,
yeah. This is why I can't remember names at the best of times, but.
But I mean, you know, this, like John's point about splitting up into separate teams and stuff, is like, it's a little more manageable to have dynamics.
Yes.
You know, you can't have all seven or eight people standing around shouting at each other that much. So splitting them off gives you like discrete chunks that you can kind of deal with narratively, which I think is fine.
Yeah.
It's an ensemble show, but you know, you kind of have to find little hooks to get into. I liked the stuff with Bayrod and Zari. I admit to being totally flummoxed by the resolution of that one, but maybe that's just because I've kind of forgotten how like Zari 1.0 works exactly. Is she able to just like, is she like, like all magic now because she lives in the totem?
I don't know.
It doesn't really matter.
It doesn't matter for this show. I don't think it really matters that much.
I thought it was interesting that they decided to, you know, show her again hanging out in the totem.
Yeah, right.
Well, I think they kind of needed to explain, like, okay, well, we're going to just give both of them one of these things, and how do we... Let's just have her magic it up so that nobody can ask questions. I actually prefer that version of the character. And it was funny, when she appeared on the screen, I was like, oh yeah, we haven't seen her for a while. Because the one in the real world feels very different to me. Like, I'm going to forget the actress's name, but she's doing a great job.
They
feel very different characters.
Yes, no, I agree. Like, even, I am so impressed in her voice work. Like, because it's subtle. She doesn't go over the top like the, you know, the new Zari has a little bit more of like a Valley Girl accent, but it's not, it's no longer, I think it was, it's diminished over the time since we've met her, which makes sense just for like fitting in with it, but also is a nice, you know, like adaptation to her circumstances. But even then, just zipping back to Zari 1.0 and having her issue, like with like two lines, you're like, oh wow, that character sounds and looks totally different.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I like the way that news are right. Well, also, it's, you know, the Valley Girl accent feels like an affectation kind of thing, like a collection of speech mannerisms more than necessarily an accent. But and you can lessen that when she doesn't have to play against her other self, right?
Yeah,
like,
right.
You don't need that distinction. She doesn't need to play quite as big because she's not, you know, in the contrast isn't required.
Right. And her mannerisms are very different too, I think.
Yeah,
and totally. She does a nice job with the physicality of that too. I agree. I like both versions of that character. I miss Zari 1.0, but
I've grown more fond of 2.0.
Yes,
I didn't. I don't think I liked her at the beginning, but
no, but you weren't meant to.
Yeah, right.
So yeah, and also 2.0 is a lot more for goofball, which is going to fit a lot better with this than 1.0, who was sort of. It's hard to say on this show, but like a bit more grounded, you know.
Mm-hmm. How are we feeling about Spooner?
You know, I think this was one of those let's go on the first mission and discover who you are. I did not like the confrontation between Spooner and Ava outside the house, only because I don't know, this show's so goofy. I don't think I really needed sort of that heartfelt confrontation, like Ava yelling at her and her yelling back. I did like the resolution.
Yeah, I think it was a little much.
A little too melodramatic. I thought that a little bit with parts of their resolution where they're like, oh, she's got, you know, a tortured backstory. And it's like, yeah, all right, that's fine. Everybody needs a backstory. But at the same time, it is not, let's not forget that the show, it's not really a drama.
Right.
So
yeah,
a no, light touch be. is necessary.
Yeah.
I did like that she was at least very game for, like, you know, they don't have an argument about, like, getting dressed up in, like, the 1950s period garb or whatever, right? Like, she just shows up and, like,
yeah.
Okay, you know, I'm here. I'm here to do business.
Yeah. I liked her look, too.
All of them. The 1950s costuming was really good.
Yeah.
right.
Bayrod looks awesome. You should just.
Oh, with the slick back hair.
And
he looks great. I mean, I liked John with his. his like little sweater underneath the trench
Mick
coat.
Mick is just the same, right? Mick doesn't wear anything, does he?
Well, I mean, no, Mick just Mick's kind of timeless.
He's kind of got a timeless style.
Exactly.
So is what's his name?
Nate.
Colossus. Nate. Nate's just like a generic Americana guy.
Yeah.
For lack of a better term, you know, like a chisel jaw, short hair. You know, does he turn into Colossus anymore? Like, is
he
that a thing?
He can, but I think they clearly do not do it very much. I don't know if it's just saving money on special effects, or also it just feels like, I don't know, funnier in some ways to have him be like he's a superhero, but man, you know, whatever.
Right, the show doesn't rely on that stuff anymore, really. I mean, even the powers of the totem were, I mean, they used them to make burgers.
Right.
They could have used the totem to blow all those zombies away, and they didn't. They
could have
floated burgers in the air.
Burned Mothra? They could have had Colossus versus Mothra, but, you know.
Yeah. Bayrod literally uses it to cool off his french fries, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is, you know, that's fine. That feels like about the speed for this show. Like, mostly.
Yeah, it does. Like, I mean, it's so funny considering where this show came from. I was talking this show up to somebody last night, and it was just like, yeah, I mean, we're thinking again about the first two seasons, and just like, man, so it's so different now.
That's
it's
so
just
bad.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
So bad. Yeah. Full points for sticking with it, though. Although I don't, is this the last season, Dan? You tend to have your
no. I don't believe so. Okay. I don't believe it. I think both this and
because they're talking about Mick, you know, whether he's coming back or not.
That's
technically
true.
He is not. I think the upshot is he is not coming back as a regular next year, but he will continue to appear as like recurring character.
Yeah, Matt Ryan is still announced as special appearance by.
Yeah, I mean that's all. I mean, that's contract. All like a, it's a contract weird, like money thing probably, but
yeah. Like if you look at the splash page for DC's Legends of Tomorrow on iTunes, it's Katie Lotz, and then he's like right next to her. Like there's the whole team is there and he's prominent. So I don't know. It just feels weird to see him called out, especially every time. But probably really boring.
I think it's probably a really boring thing about how his contract was originally structured because he appeared on a couple different shows at once.
How long did Constantine run?
One season,
just
like
one,
13 episodes.
Okay,
yeah, and it was fine, but I don't care to revisit it.
Yeah, pretty much. Any other thoughts on this week's episode? Or
it is funny to parlay that, you know, like you get one season of a show that basically failed, and then you're still doing the same character. Like
that's true.
Yeah. Ten years later,
in a totally different like style.
Oh, completely different. Yeah, right. Right. Okay. I would imagine. I didn't see it, but it had to have been.
I was trying to figure out the other day
that show failed because of him.
He was the best part of it.
Yeah.
He was easily the best part of that show.
Right.
I was trying, when did that show actually air? 2014.
Okay.
So 7 years later, still playing that character. Yeah.
Wow.
And he's played him in there's an animated movie or spin-off like that he did as well. He did the voice for
Justice League Dark, I think.
No, Constantine City. There's literally a specific Constantine City of Demons. It was an animated web series like that Vixen one they did, I think.
Okay. I guess
I never watched it, but it's it's one of those things where for whatever reason, I mean, I love him. I think he's great. I saw somebody, I feel like they were doing a movie or something, or they announced some casting of somebody playing Constantine in a movie somewhere or some other show, and I was like, I don't know, it's not Matt Ryan. I don't know how interested I am.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes you just want to change up the actor so it's a different thing, right? Like, it's going to have a different feel, and to just divorce the expectations of that character, like, you kind of need a different face.
I don't blame them for that.
DC doesn't keep the same, you know, I think they deliberately do that.
Yeah, I don't blame them for that. I enjoy this version of him so much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of versions of stuff, how do you like the color timing adjustment on Vancouver? As Sarah was running around in Alien World,
I thought it looked all right, don't you? You're not.
It looked pretty good. I think it was overdone. They did it on Star Trek Discovery. There's an episode where Saru lands on it, and they're on an away team, and it's color adjusted and Sue goes bananas. Like he starts stalking them or something. Anyway.
Oh, yeah, yeah, right. Yep. Yep.
And yeah, it's all like color time. Like, so the plants look purple or something. And it's clearly just, it's basically where Sarah just was. But, you know, it's all color adjusted. I thought it looked cool. I thought the plants looked cool. I thought they did and, a yeah, pretty the good job of making it feel alien, you know?
Right, yeah. Right. I mean, you compare that to like a, you know, episode of the original Star Trek, which is not really fair, but
yeah, like, or or TNG, even like, where yeah, they even just like go to the garden center and like buy a bunch of plants, you know,
yeah. Go to a parking lot someplace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I liked the black and white in the flashback of the how the Bert first ate the burgers. I also thought there's a really great /gross shot where they do the like quick cuts close-ups of everybody eating the burgers at one point, like where it's all sort of askew and it's like super close in on people's mouths. I was like, I like when the shows mix up their cinematography a bit. I feel like it's nice.
They did a surprisingly good zombie riff.
Yeah,
like it was, you know, that you know, they're all sort of barricaded into their little burger joint and they've got to fight a zombie horde outside. That's, you know, classic zombie movie stuff,
right?
I mean, it felt like Shaun of the Dead a little bit, because I don't know why. It's a little funny. Like, there's humor in this situation as well, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, one question I did jot down is, how does John Constantine know about Gary's glasses?
Oh, they found the glasses. Remember, last week's episode, they put them on at one point, and it shows them turning into...
Turning into Gary. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I forgot about that. Okay. I thought that was only Sarah's.
Yeah, I thought you had, I forgot that. I forgot you. I thought you had picked up a big plot hole.
Well, who cares? It doesn't matter.
We would have had to throw out this entire show.
About the guy who's subtly an alien. but got away with it because of the glasses that he has most of the time been wearing for the last few seasons.
What I do admire about this show is that they are not afraid to just do plot holes or do random stuff.
Yeah.
In large. But the episodes hang together pretty well. Do you know what I mean? Like, they know where they can hand wave and be like, don't worry about this. And they know how to be pretty meticulous about an episode and make it stick together reasonably well. Like, you get the sense that they don't do stuff, not because it slipped their minds, but because they're like, we don't care. We're just going to skip over it.
Yeah, exactly. The choices of what not to talk about are as important. Like, what you leave out is as important as what you leave in, right? And I agree with you. I think the show, and like any storytelling endeavor, when you know what your story is and like the tone and all of that, like you kind of develop that sixth sense for what needs to get covered here and what is stuff that we can kind of hand wave away because that's not what people are watching for or reading for or what have you. Yeah, and I think it shows a lot of confidence in storytelling when you can do stuff like that and be like, Our you know, people are not watching for that. People are watching because this is a funny, goofy show.
Right. Yeah. In fact, just before we started recording, we were talking about Bad Batch, which I'm not going to spoil. But and in fact, go listen to Dan and or pal Tony's podcast on that. A Complicated Profession.
That's what it's called.
I was about to say. anyway, go listen to that. That's fun. But that show also knows what to explain and what not to explain, right? Like they're like, yeah, you know, it doesn't matter. Just go along with this. And I think you're right that it takes a certain degree of confidence. And if anything, this show has an overabundance of confidence at times.
Because they're like, in spades, you know what? Yes.
They're like, Mothra, how about Mothra? Cool,
sure,
let's do that.
Why
not?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, not even just hanging a lantern on it, but like literally calling them Mothra.
Calling them Mothra?
Yeah, right.
Well, I was curious why they weren't saying McDonald's, the McDonald brothers. Was that what they were trying to reference?
I do not know enough about the background of that. I thought they started in the Midwest.
I thought so, too. I don't know.
I thought it was California, but I really can't remember. And it's the Crocs, right?
It's the Crocs, yeah.
It wasn't
them.
But he bought it. He bought it from them.
Ray Kroc bought it from, I guess, he's McDonald's. Somebody.
Yeah, but that's true. They did. The original one was in San Bernardino.
San Bernardino. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So that, you know, I figured
it must have been. And then, of course, they can't use it, so they have to create another.
Yeah.
Well, and then if they're going to create another, why not tie it into?
It's Big Belly Burger. which is the McDonald's of the Arrowverse.
Right.
Yeah. I was kind of curious why they didn't just say McDonald's. But they mentioned Mothra. Yeah. Maybe they can. I don't know. I guess we're weighing McDonald's lawyers versus Mothra's lawyers, or whoever owns Mothra.
You can't. You also
Mothra doesn't have very good lawyers.
Yeah.
It's those little singing things.
Gamera, little people who's full of meat. I think there's no. I mean, there's nothing to sue somebody for mentioning your name on a podcast, right? But you can't use the trademarks or anything, so you couldn't use the image. Imagery associated with McDonald's.
I wonder if that song influenced this episode.
I know, I was just thinking about that.
Camera is really neat. who was Mike portraying when he was playing that at the piano at the end?
I literally have no idea. I feel like I never even saw the original source of that. It was just something my friends used to sing that all the time from the episode. God. Yeah.
That's so funny. If you don't know what I'm talking about, it's an MST3K episode where they do a Gamera movie and they come up with this song about Gamera. Gamera is really neat. Gamera is turtle meat. We all love you, Gamera.
Classic. Shall we ritual?
Sure.
Yeah.
Guy?
This is a big belly biff. It's fun. I think I preferred last week's, but I mean, the show is just good, goofy, fun, you know, and it lives within a space where it hasn't really nosedived in a while, and I don't feel like there's any peak to it. Maybe we'll get a great episode again. Of course we will. I don't know. I don't know why I'm talking myself out of that, but there's not going to be any real heavy hitting. No, not even that. There's going to be some heavy-hitting emotional stuff. I felt pretty... I don't know what I'm saying.
John and I are going to go out for a coffee while you finish.
He keeps talking himself out of his arguments.
It's a biff. You know what? The more I think about it, the more excited I am. I guess it's because I watched it at 6 a.m. this morning, and I was just not super jazzed and excited about it because I was tired. And then I rewatched it again, and the second time I was just jotting down notes and screwing around on my phone. But yeah, it's good, and I'm looking forward to the rest of the season. How many episodes, Dan?
I want to say somewhere between 14 and 16, I think.
That's good. That feels right. I don't know of any 23 of these in a row.
Yeah, I mean, and they've never done that many. It's usually pretty limited.
Yeah, so that'll be good and fun, and I'm curious to see what Sarah's adventures are all about. Not because it's Sarah, just because it's she's clearly set up, separated from the team. So that's an interesting dynamic.
Yeah. John?
Yeah, it's a biff. I mean, I think I agree. It's not quite as good as last week's. And it's, not much happens that really matters for later. I mean, we knew Spooner was staying. And I mean, the only thing that happens is Sarah's been stung by something. The stuff that happens with the burger place doesn't matter very much. but it's a fun episode, and that's what this part of this show is about. So I liked it.
Yeah. I debated whether or not I wanted to give this something lower than the biff. I feel like it still makes it just in the biff territory for me. It did not hold me interest wise as much as the previous episode. But it wasn't bad. It was, or even that meh. I just, I sort of chalked some of that up to being very tired while I was watching it. But I think to John's point, it's I think the A plot is very rote. This is sort of to set out that template of we're going to be hunting aliens every week for the next several weeks, right? This is what that episode is going to feel like. And, the plot will sort of develop from there. And that's fine. My tolerance for gross out
I think some of the burger eating made me a little
it was clearly intended to be unsettling, but it was maybe a little too good at its job for me. Mm-hmm. So I was I'm not super invested in this, although it did remind me of one of the great Buffy episodes where she works in the fast food joint.
Right.
Yeah. They think it's
the double meat. So I did end up thinking about that a little bit. I was everything pales a little bit when compared to that. But It's still, yeah, it was fun. I like the characters enough to, like, you know, even get me through an episode where I'm not super jazzed about it. But yeah. I don't know. We'll keep going and see how it turns out.
Yeah.
I have the same aversion to gross out stuff or scatological humor in general. Like, it's just, not that I'm trying to seem frou-frou or anything or above it. It's just like that vomiting thing just grosses me out. I don't like it. Well, I know you're not supposed to like it, but it's just gross. Right. And, like, it just turned me off thing. The show. I mean, it's like, I don't want to see this.
That part bugged me a little bit, but I mean, I think that was less than the cop just eating a burger and, like, having stuff all over his, that sauce all over
that
his
was,
face.
That was really gross. On the other hand, you're supposed to be twigging that stuff's weird.
Yes.
So, you know.
Yeah. Anyway, as long as they don't go back to this well every week of, like, aliens are gross. Let's show you how gross aliens are. Like,
yeah.
I'll be okay. All right. Well, that is it for our recap this week. Shall we jump over to some brief superhero sweep?
Sure.
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it. I have been catching up on season 2 of Pennyworth, which I enjoyed season 1 quite a bit. And I had just been sort of sitting around to the point where all of season 2 was done, so I could do the sign up for like a week's free trial and just binge it all.
Binge what you want, and then
yep. So I've watched about half of it in like I don't know, 2 or 3 days. It's 10 episodes; it's not that long. But I've enjoyed it a lot. There's a lot of good stuff in that show. I feel like it's Danny Cannon and Bruno Heller, who are the same guys who did Gotham. It's not really connected to Gotham in any way. In fact, season 2 leans a lot more, just even further into sort of alt history almost. But the cast is great, and it has that same sort of bananas off the wall sensibility that Gotham has, where it's just like stuff's wacky and weird, and we're not going to really hold your hand too much about it. You just got to accept that that's the world this is in.
Right.
And it has, like I said, some particularly great performances. I think Jack Bannon, who plays Alfred, is great. He's really good. And it took me until this season to realize that I felt like he was channeling another actor. He had been appeared in a few episodes of a British mystery series I like called Endeavor, where he plays the son of one of the main detectives. And I realized suddenly he was channeling the actor Roger Allam, who played his father in some ways. And I was like, oh, once I saw it, I could not unsee it. But it's great because I love both of those characters. That's cool. So that's a lot of fun. The actors who play Thomas and Martha Wayne are a lot of fun. Aleister Crowley, who we discussed previously, appears in this show in a very different, I mean, not at all historical, it feels like, because he's much younger. I think he's dead by this point in the real world. Just a lot of bizarre stuff in there, but it's a fun show and it looks great. They clearly spent a lot of money on it. So I will see how the rest of that season goes, but it is, I've been enjoying it quite a bit.
I think I saw the first episode or the first couple.
I watched the first few.
And then I remember liking it.
Dropped it.
But yeah, not, I guess not enough to follow it.
Yeah. We talked about it on an episode, at least.
Yeah, I think we did a little bit.
For a bunch. I mean, I don't remember what
what
our context was, but I definitely remember talking about it.
Yeah, I had okay feelings about it. They didn't jazz me up that much, but it felt like it was, it did feel Gotham-esque, but also not beholden to what Gotham did.
Right. I mean, it's set.
I don't know, Dad, if that's how you feel like.
Well, yeah, I think it's got a stylistic and tonal like connection to Gotham. Like you don't really worry about it matching the continuity, because I think if you think too hard about that, it won't make any sense.
And that really worked well for Gotham too, right? Exactly. Yeah. Like Gotham, I think they found their footing when they threw out everything that they felt that they had to do, you know, like when they made Barbara go bad, when they started introducing characters that did wacky things. I think that's when that show found its footing. So it makes sense if you're starting a new show to be like, okay, well, same approach. We're just going to do what we feel is right for these characters and tell the story that we want to tell and go with that.
And I think they benefit from having learned that lesson on Gotham by just sort of being able to do it from the get-go.
Exactly.
Of just like, this is where we're going. I will say there are some choices they make occasionally that I disagree with. I think they have used the killing off characters to motivate other characters trope a little bit too much at times. But yeah. Overall, I think that, you know, in some ways, it's only got the very lightest veneer of like a Batman continuity at all. This could easily be a alt history show about a sort of, you know, ex-SAS soldier become fixer in 1960s London, and it would be fine. Like, you don't even need to have a connection to the DC universe, really, but that helps draw people in.
Yeah. Right. That's cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Maybe I'll pick that up again. Next up in our superhero sweep, I guess, is that there's a new show coming out called Sweet Tooth, which is based on a comic, and it's, I guess, produced by Susan Downey and Robert Downey Jr. And Beth Schwartz of Arrow Frame, for whom our favorite doctor, Dr. Schwartz, is named. She's attached to the show.
Dr. Schwartz.
Yeah. Wasn't she great?
Yeah.
She was just a good,
just competent
little character.
Constantly having to deal with Oliver's crap.
Yeah. And like, not a dummy, but right, like, not right. Calling him out, you know? It's like, okay, just don't lie to me. Just, I'm not going to ask, but let's just get this done.
Here comes idiot. Queen again.
Yeah. anyway, so, yeah, so she's attached to the show. I should have looked it up. I don't know if she's the showrunner or what.
She is EP writer, co-showrunner.
Oh, man. That's awesome. Because this show looks great. It looks really, really great.
Yeah.
And I liked John, why don't you say what you liked about the preview where they mentioned.
Oh, well, I mean, it just seems like it has a good heart and is trying to be, I don't know, optimistic. And somebody makes a comment in there about the fact that the graphic novel, I guess, was a little bit darker and they took a little lighter tone with it, I guess, which... I enjoyed it. You know, it's like, you don't always have to make them darker. You can actually go the other way sometimes.
Right. Because, I mean, a panel in a comic is static and it's brief and you can turn the page and you're done with it kind of thing. But like an extended horror sequence is going to...
Right.
It changes the tone a lot more than a limited sort of couple of panels or a page in a comic, you know?
Yeah.
Right for the medium, basically. And it seems like I was really happy to hear that, like you did, like, oh, we lightened it up a little. And at some point they're saying, like, yeah, it's going to be, we want the whole family to be able to cuddle up on the couch and watch it. And when you look at it, it is super high production quality. And it doesn't look like it's, you know, this is not Charlie and the Chocolate, although Charlie and the Chocolate Factory is crazy horrific when you think about it. But it's not Candyland, right? It looks serious and serious things happen.
Yeah.
But to hear them say it, it's like, look, we're not going to scare the kids too much. It's nice.
Yeah.
Particularly
considering it's a story about a kid.
It's a story about a kid, and they keep saying how full of hope he is, which, I mean, this is not a superhero story, but it's kind of superhero-esque, so that's nice.
Yeah.
What else? Speaking of things that are just arbitrarily dark... Sorry, Dan, I don't know if you if you wanted to do this. I picked the ball.
Please.
And I'm running with it here. Venom 2 trailer is out.
Although weirdly comedic, I thought, when
exactly,
I watched it. Seemed like they kind of leaned into the madcap, bizarre, dark comedy rather than...
I never saw the first one.
I did not see the first one either.
I did. And
I might watch
it. It's less funny than this one. Yeah, go watch it. Honestly, if only because it made a crapload of money. Mm-hmm. And not that that's commendable in and of itself, but it is interesting to see where sort of the gravitational pull may be in terms of other projects, right? Like Deadpool, I wasn't excited about Deadpool, and then I saw it and I liked it and I'm like, okay, I get it. You actually made a good movie. It's funny. I don't like arbitrary violence, and I don't particularly like Deadpool. I like Ryan Reynolds, and that was funny. It was just a good movie. Venom's worth watching. I think Aquaman is also worth watching, because that also made a silly amount of money. I don't like that movie. Don't get me wrong. There is some weird, crazy world building in it.
But okay.
Well, in that it is an artifact of our time and a superhero thing, and it's like, well, let's...
I suppose.
Yeah, like, as I don't want to say academic, because there's nothing academic about Aquaman, But I don't know, just as a sort of
I have a friend, I think I've mentioned this before, I have a friend who watches that movie over and over again, because I think partly because he's trying to figure it out. Like,
like I'm picturing
he's going to divine some sort of truth about the movie. If you
I'm picturing the red yarn board there, yeah. where it's like, I can just I can, like, I've almost cracked it.
Mike, no.
That's hilarious. Anyway, poor Mike. Good luck, buddy. Anyway, so the Venom 2 trailer's out. Carnage is just an even more
venomy than Venom. Yeah.
More venomy than Venom, well, which does not interest me at all. But
it's an ability to turn Venom into a, you know, anti-hero by giving them him somebody worse.
Somebody
to fight.
Further.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that CGI, I mean, there's just so much going on. It feels like a Transformers movie.
Yeah, I mean, Carnage is kind of like that. I mean, I read some of the comics with him in it in back in the, you know, 90s and so, and like, it's just a weird, I mean.
Yeah, whereas Venom often looks like a guy in a suit.
Right.
Carnage always has a very alien-esque appearance to him.
Right, yeah. Woody Harrelson Woody Harrelson playing the Carnage.
It looks to be just chewing scenery left and right.
No, that's what Woody Harrelson does.
Yeah, And I liked that trailer. I thought the trailer. I was intrigued by the trailer. Anyway.
Yeah, it was funnier than the first one. Like, they did seem to lean into the humor. Yeah, I liked the way
the symbiote making breakfast at the beginning was pretty funny.
Like, I legitimately laughed. I'm like, that's pretty, and the symbiote having a sort of a good nature.
Yeah,
to him.
It's like the plant in Little Shop of Horrors.
Yes. Yeah. Oh man. Okay. Now that you've said that, now I'm actually more into it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like when he goes into the depot. No, God, what do they call them? The bodega. Oh no, they're in Sam's. Who cares? The corner store.
The bodega store. Yeah.
Sure. And she says hello to Eddie and hello to Venom.
Yes.
And then she's mad at him. That was chocolate. And he starts getting angry. And she gives him crap. And then Venom just wants to eat her. And it's like, her reaction is like,
cannot eat her.
Her reaction is kind of funny because it's not sheer fear. It's more like, oh, you rascal. Like, it's got a funny twist to it. Anyway, yeah, I think.
I mean, I hope it's good. I really do.
Sure. I mean, I hope everything's good.
Yeah. Right. Why not?
Yeah. Exactly. But I think the trick to that movie is that you're going to have to be okay with your quote unquote hero eating people.
Right.
And you're going to have to believe that the world around him is also okay with him eating people. And then, you know, go from there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We'll see. Yeah. I feel more positive about this than I expected to. To be honest.
Right. Me too.
Yeah. Anything else, or sort of cover the?
That's it. That's what I got. I don't know what.
That's about it for me.
Oh, I could remind people that we're selling shirts.
Oh yeah, they should do that.
If you'd like to support the show, you can go to cottonbureau.com and search for TVA, and there you will find a lovely... I got mine over the weekend, by the way, and it looks fantastic. It turned out really well. The colors are great.
Awesome.
And I got a what I think they call it, like, macchiato shirt, which is, I think, is hilarious, because when you're setting up the sale on Cotton Bureau, the colors are listed as, like, brown. And then when the page gets up, it's like macchiato. So I got the macchiato shirt and it looks awesome. And I wore it over the weekend. But it's a TVA logo from the trailer for Loki. And that's the organization that he gets taken by after he uses the cosmic cube, or whatever you want to call it. The
Tesseract
to zap himself someplace else. So, we would appreciate your support, and that's one way you can show it.
Another way is to go listen to Dan's. Well, God, Dan's got way too many shows, but complicated profession is actually, it's fun. I like it, and you know, Tony's great. Dan's holding it together.
I'm there. Let's be clear.
Dan is also on the show.
I'm also present.
Yeah.
And of course, you can always support our show too. Just to remind you, if you go to theincomple.com/members and you're already signed up as a member, you can send a little support our way, or you could sign up and join the Incomparable membership. Why not?
Yeah.
Treat yourself.
Treat us.
And us. More importantly, treat us. All right. Well,
we only do this for the money.
That's right.
So, clearly. Yeah, for sure.
Clearly.
It's not like we're doing it anyway.
We're in it for the cash.
Yeah. I mean, what, 5-6 years ago, we turned down that cash faucet, and we've never been able to turn it off.
Yeah. Spotify doesn't call back now.
Yeah, it's like it's like Mickey Mouse and the Sorcerer's Apprentice, but with money instead of water.
Exactly.
That's basically what it's like. Yeah, it's just exactly. Like that.
Yeah.
I will say, you know, this is, I believe this is episode 90 of Biff.
Ooh.
So we're only 10 episodes away from the Biff episode 100 spectacular. I'm just going to start writing checks I can't cash.
We could do something. We really could do something.
We could. I mean, we could have so Tony many on. Shows to
yeah,
cover.
I know. We have to figure out what we're going to do when we run into an overlap pretty soon.
I was just about to ask if we have a planned programming
we don't.
That we want to advise
we,
anybody.
We don't. Okay. And we're we definitely will, we not going to make one offline. Up live on air. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
Are you kidding? Oh, man. What? You guys don't walk tightropes without a net?
We've like.
I don't know. I don't want to remind you, but like I teased t-shirts for like years and they finally happened. And John just comes up with one and executes it within like 3 days.
I mean, that was mistake one was putting Guy in charge of t-shirts. We all need to play to our strengths is my point.
I don't know what my strength is.
We're still identifying like guys.
We have another t-shirt on Cotton Bureau, which is the loneliest duty. So, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. Which is, I like that
t-shirt. That one as well.
I wear that one pretty regularly.
Really, we should be putting that under the aegis of John's t-shirt store or whatever at this point. Because
my t-shirt empire.
Empire, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I love that Dan organizes and edits all of these shows and John takes care of all the t-shirts. And I make up some BS about sponsors from time to time. That's my contribution.
I mean, I think you're the official rating system guru, so that is an important role.
Yeah, I mean, that's the rating system that keeps people coming back, for sure.
Somebody needs to do it, is all I'm saying.
I would imagine that's a lot of work.
Yeah, I mean, he's got tomes and tomes open over there.
There's so many different scales.
I had to learn how to use a pivot table in Excel.
It's an eight-dimensional matrix.
It's hard work. Please
barely know what a pivot. I barely know what a pivot table is. Yeah, the only reason I know what it is because it's you know, somebody's got to count all that money.
That's right. All right, that's it for us for this week. As always, I'd like to thank my compatriots for being here. John Moltz, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, and I'm going to go eat some lunch, and it's definitely not going to be a burger.
Oh, good. Thank God. Guy English, always a pleasure.
I had the same feeling. I like when they went to a burger joint, I'm like, yeah, I could do with a really good burger. And I'm like, no, I don't.
I was glad I had that burger last night before I watched this episode.
I'm not a burger guy, but I did want those fries. Those fries look pretty good. Thank you.
Are you a sentient prawn guy?
Yes, I love me some sentient prawns.
Sentient prawns.
The more sentient, the better. That just makes them extra delicious. Thank you everybody out there for reading along and sticking with us. Hope you're doing well. And we'll be back, of course, to talk about the next episode of Legends of Tomorrow, season 6, episode 3, which is, I believe, entitled The X Factor. EX Factor. I guess we'll find out. Anyways, we'll see you next week.